Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, July 13th, 2019, you are listening to The Deep Dive with Rich Van, part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup of shows. Every day, a different show, different topic every week. For more information, go to pwtorchdailycast.com. And this week, I'm going to be talking about the glut of wrestling. And to do that, particularly today of all days, I'm going to be bringing on one of our very special Torch hosts. He talks about things on the canvas, off the canvas, and everything in between, Mr. Zach Haydorn. Zach, welcome back to the Deep Dive, and how are you doing this Saturday?
I'm doing great, Rich. Thanks for having me. It's I always love talking wrestling with you, and we got quite the day and a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, today we got started this morning with New Japan's G1 Climax Day, Match Week Day 2, B Block. At 8 p.m., we're going to have both Fight for the Fallen from AEW and Evolve. And I believe at 7 or 7:30, the AEW Fight for the Fallen pre-show, or buy-in as they call it, mm-hmm. will kick off as well. So before we get started with all of these, let's start with what you do with the Torch and give folks a little idea of what you do and where they can find you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, you can catch my work on pwtorch.com every single Monday night. I do the Alternative Perspective Monday Night Raw report. My report is on pwtorch.com live during Raw, opposite, right next to Wade Keller, so you can compare and contrast what we have to say throughout the show. But I cover the show top to bottom as it's happening, and then provide my analysis along the way. So if you're looking to follow along during the show, that report and Wade is up to date as everything progresses on Monday night. And as we all know, there's been quite a bit to talk about and analyze for better and for worse these last couple weeks. So it's been a fun go. And then on the VIP side of things, go VIP if you haven't, and you can check out my weekly VIP audio show on the canvas. And what that is a show rooted in current events, but instead of talking, you know, booking, storyline, news, angles, and revolving those current events, I dig in and I hone in on the, you know, the artistry of wrestling within those current events. So we'll break down matches frame by frame by frame. I'll do, you know, deep, you know, big time looks at specific promos, Paul Heyman stuff, Brock Lesnar stuff, Roman Reigns. I'll also analyze shows holistically from an artistic angle. Did a show a couple weeks back on the Crockett Cup, on Double or Nothing, on StarCast. Rich, you've been a guest a few times, and we've broken down a handful of different matches, most recently frame-by-frame analysis of Cody versus Dustin from Double or Nothing. That was a really fun show. So I kind of just take the artistic angle, hone in on the performance aspect of wrestling, and just look at that and pull a bunch of different takes and analysis out of that scope. So go VIP if you haven't already, and check it out. It usually drops on Fridays for Torch VIP members. And then on Twitter as well. I'm active on Twitter during wrestling shows and not during wrestling shows too, but it's at ZHeydornTorch, at ZHeydornTorch, Torch. Would love a follow.
Excellent. And so we have these three. I will warn you when we talk about G1, because it did happen this morning, if you haven't watched it, please don't. You know, bail out as soon as you hear us talking, because I don't want to spoil it, but at the same time, I do want to talk about it in the scope of what's going on today. So, Zach,
yeah.
I'm going to be covering for the Torch the Evolve 10th Anniversary Show,
mm-hmm.
and that being on the WWE Network. Let's start with that. Like, that alone could have been a
yeah.
show. What
for
are your
sure.
thoughts on
for
the show and, like, the pieces that kind of, like, came into place to make it so?
Well, I just think it's a interesting microcosm of what is happening in the world of wrestling in 2019. I think if you look back, really not that long ago, just 3-4 years ago maybe, and probably not even that long, you would not see WWE actively promoting essentially another wrestling company on their TV shows on Monday Night Raw, on SmackDown, and you certainly wouldn't have, you know, any other wrestling company on their WWE Network platform. But alas, in a few hours here, that's exactly what's going to happen. And I think it's a sign of the times. I think it shows just how niche wrestling has gotten, where you can have this big, you know, conglomerate of a wrestling company, and you know that company now has a various group of styles of promotions that live under its banner. And Evolve is the first. We've seen, you know, WWE take over, pun intended, the UK as well with a similar type thing. And it's just really interesting to see just another company, an independent wrestling company, you know, being actively promoted by WWE. If that's not 2019, I don't know what is. And you add in the fact that AEW is a player now. This is one of the things that WWE has in their back pockets. They can go around, and if they want to play that game from a business standpoint, they can gobble up and promote just numerous different kinds of independent promotions if they want to go ahead and compete with AEW without having to trot out, you know, their big WWE stars like Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar, etc. They can try to do it with other independent companies. So it's fascinating. We get to see it in action tonight for the first time, and I'm looking forward to it.
Now, as I look up and down this card, I'm looking particularly at seeing Catch Point return. So you have Matt Riddle versus the former leader of Catch Point, Drew Gulak. And I remember, when I was running a couple of days ago, I was listening to the 80s Tell It to My Heart, which was the catchphrase theme back in the day. And I thought about it, and it was so funny to me that you fast forward and Gulak and Riddle are just, you know, Gulak on 205 Live, Riddle on NXT. They're both doing well for themselves. Remember them back in their Evolve days was quite interesting, especially with Riddle being this star in the making that everyone could kind of see. What are your thoughts on, do you see it as a homecoming? Do you see it as a step back for the folks that are returning to Evolve from NXT?
Yeah, no, I don't see it as a step back at all. And here's why. I mean, for one thing, you know, Matt Riddle and really all the guys who are, you know, returning to the company, quote unquote, they're, you know, they've elevated themselves since they've left. And this isn't them leaving WWE and kind of going back to their roots. This is them being positioned and featured on a show that's very important to the overall WWE portfolio for, you know, attracting new viewers to the WWE Network. This is a big deal, and WWE is leaning on not only their name value within their company, within WWE, within that banner, but they're leaning on them to draw in fans that go, I remember Matt Riddle, I remember Drew Gulak back in Evolve. I gotta check that out. I can't miss this 10th anniversary. So this isn't a step back. This is WWE strategically utilizing talent that has come from that promotion to get eyes on that product and to get people to, you know, engage with that product on the network. So this is a business move. It's a smart one. I think, you know, Riddle and Gulak and everybody else is going to kind of have that chip on their shoulder a bit to say, hey, I need to prove myself in the ring tonight. I think we're going to see some great work there. So no, not a step back at all, but I think a feather in their cap in terms of being trusted to carry that weight on what turned out to be a big night in wrestling.
And when you look at Evolve, I think giving a tip of the cap for 10 years to Gabe Sapolsky is more than due, especially them being in the 2300 arena where he cut his teeth as a kind of second and third to Paul Heyman. With his status as an employee of the WWE while also being the lead person for Evolve, do you still see it as a truly independent show, or do you see it more as – I've seen it Evolve for years, even once I saw Riddle and Triple H kind of recommended him going to Evolve, basically as like one of their most favorite nations, kind of how a step beyond what maybe, say, I'm thinking back – when they first started with Progress, and then a step closer than Beyond Wrestling, who boasts having so many wrestlers that have gone on to WWE without actually having had a direct relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard at this point to call Evolve, you know, a true independent promotion with their involvement in WWE, and there's no, and that's not, I'm not saying that as a negative. I feel like I'm just you know, calling a spade with that one. You know, they are a piece of the WWE. They're like, you know, not quite like NXT, but almost. You know, I mean, they're there as something else that a fan can watch if they have the WWE network. It's a niche product. It's something that you know, could in addition to be a home for a breeding ground for potential new viewers, but it's also a home where WWE can start cultivating new talent too. So that, and it's not a bad thing, but I don't know if you can call them a true independent promotion at this point. And I, you know, I think on a day like today, we have to talk about Gabe Sapolsky a little bit, and I'll throw a question back to you, Rich. Like, I mean, you look back at his tenure, you know, coming out of the Paul Heyman umbrella. I mean, what do you think his legacy is as far as the talent that he's worked with and nurtured over the years? I mean, you look at all the names from the CM Punks of the world to the all the way to the Matt Riddles of the world, and man, it is some great work on his part to not only find talent but cultivate it too, right? I mean, I feel like we can't have this day without it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the diversity of the talent too, because a guy like Drew Gulak is boots and trunks all the way, but they were able to turn that into a mindset where, you know, Evolve and Ring of Honor under Gabe went from different styles of wrestling, especially Evolve. I mean, when they had their biggest time in the sun, it was when they went to, you know, for lack of a better phrase, as many people on Twitter call it, the Grapple F lifestyle of just wrestling for wrestling's sake. Timothy Thatcher, you know, when he was Evolve champ, he might not have been the most to others. I mean, I love Tim Thatcher. I just want to get that out of the way. I love Stokely Hathaway too, when he joined up and kind of destroyed one of my favorite factions from the inside, that it being Catch Point. Tell it to my heart. Tell me I'm the only one that remembers how Catch Point used to be before Stokely took a chunk out of him. But Tim Thatcher went through, and many people complained about his, like, stoic nature, but I loved it. And then you look at, like you said, the powder keg that is a CM Punk. You look at Chris Hero. I think if not for Gabe Sapolsky, this third or fourth version of Chris Hero wouldn't be in NXT, because he essentially became the angry old man in the promotion jacking dudes up. Drew Galloway, his I need to help you, Johnny, on the way for Johnny Wrestling to head to NXT was such a great way to get him ready to go back to WWE. And then you think about the tag team.
Yeah, I mean, you just ran through just some key names right there. It's mind-boggling just the talent that he's worked with and cultivated, and that are, you know, main players in wrestling right now, not just in Evolve, but in the WWE and NXT and a larger net than that too. It's crazy, just crazy.
Yeah, and then think about the way we talked about what he's done in terms of pulling talent out and making them great. But look at what he's done also with the guys who NXT hadn't necessarily used. I was just talking a few days ago with Cam and Travis about the ingenuity of most of Street Profits' time together as a tag team wasn't on television. They spent about a year and a half just on the circuit. And then when they finally got on TV, they got pulled for about 2 or 3 months to be the Evolve Tag Champions. And that then, I argued, kind of gave them the rocket fuel to come back to NXT. And then now they're on the main roster and NXT at the same time, being very entertaining and wrestling at a level higher than I thought they would before they left.
Yeah, and they also, I think, you know, use that time kind of, like you said, on that circuit and Evolve off TV to kind of hone in on what and who they are as characters and what their gimmick really is. I think they had kind of, you know, pieces of it before that run, but I think they've done a, because of that time spent there, they've been able to put some of those pieces together and really, you know, make their shtick and their act, you know, more marketable and you know, ready for the main roster.
And we've talked a lot about that. We talked about they have two-day show, obviously, and then this one, the biggest pushback had been that it's in direct competition with AEW's Fight for the Fallen, which is a show that not only is the continuation of the maiden voyage of AEW as a promotion, but one that was done for charity to benefit shooting victims in the area. What were your thoughts on the counter-programming, and what were your thoughts on kind of the reaction, particularly of Kenny Omega, who wound up deleting the tweet at his, when he showed how much angst he had over the fact WWE would counter-program?
Yeah, you know, I think that's something that AEW is going to have to get used to and be okay with. Like, I think, you know, if you're going to, you know, blow up, you know, Triple H thrones on pay-per-view, you know, I think you've got to be ready for, you know, some kind of pushback in some form or another. And I think, you know, this is what competition is. And if you, you know, I think AEW has been in the right frame of mind in terms of, hey, you know, we are providing an alternative for the wrestling fan. We're providing them with another avenue to go down, another company to watch, a different style, a different type of product. But, you know, they have to understand, too, that that product is competing with WWE. So I think stuff like this is fair game. I know there's, you know, a charity angle to it. I think that does add, you know, another layer of WWE being petty. But, you know, the root of it is it's a business, it's a war, and I think AEW just needs to be ready for that and needs to just continue on their path. I think, you know, Kenny Omega probably spoke up, and I got the feeling that he just was peeved that WWE would be that petty, but, you know, they're swimming with the big sharks now, and I think this was a bit of a rude awakening to that fact, but hey, it's happening. They're there. I think they're certainly ready to go, but I don't, that didn't faze me too much. I think that's par for the course. WWE is going to try to protect their ground as the competition, you know, amasses its resources, and, you know, who wouldn't if they were them? So I don't really fault them for that at all.
And I think you kind of answered what was going to be my follow-up of, do you see it as a competition? Because I know a good number of people, particularly on Twitter, were downplaying it, saying it was just a coincidence that WWE was doing this. And personally, I, like you, see it as, if this is a business and you're trying to make as much money and you've seen the history of the WWE with rival promotions, this is par for the course. And I don't feel particularly good, bad, or I'm indifferent to it because it's just what they do. I don't see that as something where it's this big affront. And I think the sooner they understand that, and by they, I mean AEW, the sooner they'll understand what they're involved with. Because for better or worse, the interview that Jon Moxley did with our editor-publisher, Wade Keller, with Chris Jericho, with the local Las Vegas radio, they highlighted functional issues within WWE, and there needed to be a response. And from Seth Rollins' tweets to some of these behaviors, even with the throne issue thrown off the table, no pun intended, it was going to be a difficult situation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think if, like I said, if you're going to be, it's kind of like, you know, an older brother playing with a, you know, playing basketball with a younger brother. You know, if you're the younger brother and you're, you know, pushing and fouling and trying to get the upper hand, and, you know, sometimes you're going to just kind of get that hard foul on you too. And I think that's kind of what's happening here. And it shocks you for a quick minute, but you got to get back up on your feet and continue on. And I think AEW did a relatively good job of that. I think there was some initial blowback of, oh my God, how could WWE run on the same day and at the same time as our show? And I think if you let, you know, initially your reaction is, that's crazy, that's ridiculous. But if you take a step back and just really look holistically at that picture, you kind of have to say to yourself, well, sure, well, of course, they've got the resources. They've got, you know, a brand under their umbrella that could compete. They don't have to bring out, you know, their hugely popular big guns to potentially do so. So, hey, they're going to try it. And I think if you, you know, take a realistic look at that, A, yes, it is competition, and B, you know, it's par for the course, and it's right in line with what Vince McMahon and his company have done all throughout its history. You know, this is, you know, no different than, you know, some predatory moves he made in the 80s.
And I want to take a little pause to say that if you want to join in, feel free to give us a call if you're listening online, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And don't forget to hit 1 on the touch tone. Since we're talking so much about AEW, WWE, let's jump to the AEW side of the ledger. What are your thoughts on the upcoming show? And with the advent of digital, do you really see it as too much of a competition when you can watch either of these items in the case of AEW for free on demand? And if you already have the WWE Network, you could watch the Evolve 10th anniversary at your leisure.
Yeah, that is a really interesting intricacy to, you know, the competitive nature of the business here in 2019 compared to, you know, 20, 25 years ago for sure. So I'll start with the show itself. I'm very much looking forward to the Rhodes versus the Young Bucks tonight. I think that is going to be a really interesting match for a lot of reasons. One, and like you and I talked about on my show, has it been over a month already? Jeez, it has.
Yeah.
But when we talked, it was, you know, they really laid the groundwork for a nice story between Cody and Dustin. And I got to think the pop for them tonight when they walk out through that curtain based off of that match that they had at Double or Nothing is going to be significant and something to watch and something that I want to see, you know, live as it happens. I think that's going to be a really cool moment coming out of that wonderful match that they had. And then you have them in a match against the Young Bucks who stylistically are so different than they are. You know, Cody and Dustin aren't, you know, the high flyers. They aren't the Lucha Brothers. So you're going to see, you know, a different Young Bucks match. You're going to see them, you know, do other things than just spot after spot after spot after spot like they did, you know, with the Lucha Brothers. So I'm excited for those two reasons. I think it's going to be a heck of a match. You've got some great storylines, you know, within that match between, you know, between the brothers, between Dusty and Cody. We know that Cody is close, you know, with the Young Bucks outside of the company, I mean, and outside of storyline. So there's a lot of balls in the air. And then just the wrestling itself, you got some great minds in there. And I think you put those great minds together with the foundation that they've laid storyline-wise and the psychology they can layer onto that should make for a very, very memorable main event. That said, I think what AEW needs to clean up is, I'm not breaking any news here, but I really hope that they hone in on that pre-show and they really try to figure out a way to make that thing more appealing to people who potentially may or may not want to watch your show. I think there's a time and a place for that kind of wrestling, but I don't know that kind of wrestling is representing what's been taking place on their main shows. It's kind of like they've been putting that type of wrestling there just to have it there, to have a diverse palette for the show holistically. But from a business perspective, you know, that show is whetting the appetite of potential customers who are deciding whether or not they want to watch, or on pay-per-view days, they're deciding whether or not to spend their money there. So I'm interested to see what the buy-in or the pre-show looks like today and see if they've learned anything from the last two shows that could help them get that in line.
Now, my one follow-up, and I asked Wade the same question when we did the Fyter Fest as a counter to that, because of the lack of television, most of the people who are watching right now have already been kind of, to keep with their theme, have already bought into AEW. A lot of the first hour of calls were people who hadn't or were looking for reasons to figure out if they would. Do you see this as an experiment they can get away with until television, or do you think of it as something that needs to stop like ASAP?
I don't think it's necessarily make or break, you know, as far as, okay, the company's going to sink or swim or their television debut is going to sink or swim based on these pre-shows. I think if they can get them cleaned up, I think they can have more eyes on their product going into TV, you know, just have a little bit more interest there, have a little bit more of a, you know, solid, you know, P1 fan base that's ready to go for television. And then you will unlock an additional batch of viewers when TV comes. So I don't think it's something that's going to just totally cripple, you know, their debut on TNT or cripple, you know, the buy rate for All Out coming up in a couple months. But I just think, you know, there is some buzz around the company right now. There, you know, you've got TNT Twitter handlers tweeting out information about the show tonight. And if you catch somebody that goes, oh, you know, let's see what this thing's all about, and they turn it on at 6:30 and see the librarians, well, that's not indicative of what's going to happen later in the show between Cody, Dustin, and the Young Bucks. And I think that's the connection that they need to make. They need to hook fans while they have their attention, because who knows if they'll ever get it back. So I don't think it's crippling, but I think it's something that if I'm them, I speed up that process to get to a better place as fast as possible to keep as many interested eyes as I can.
Now, you mentioned Cody, and one of his main feuds going up, he has a kind of a simmering feud with Jericho starting, but he also has one now with the former Master of 10 there in AEW. And he's in a six-man tag where it's kind of been thrown together. So Sean Spears is just kind of there. What are your thoughts on that? And does that kind of tie into what you were just saying? Or do you see it as okay to kind of get an idea for Spears in terms of what he can do? Because we haven't seen too much of him in this new incarnation.
No, I think this is a big night for Spears. I think he's in a six-man that to me, like you said, and I totally agree, feels a bit thrown together. For one thing, you know, MJF is on his team and was out there on the last show, you know, helping Cody to the back and looking very, very, you know, concerned. So there's a big disconnect and inconsistency there. But, you know, looking past that, which is something that I think AEW does need to take a look at and get, you know, that booking smoothed out show to show, you know, I think he's got to play a role, you know, later on in that main event match. I think there's a lot of pieces there. You've got Dustin out there. You've got the Young Bucks. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to really drum up some heat for Spears outside of a chair shot to the head. I think you can do some emotional storytelling with Cody's brother out there in particular. And if they're going to go down the road where Cody is facing Spears, maybe at an All Out, I think that could be something that's in the cards. This is the night where they really need to plant some emotional seeds to drum up interest and intrigue in that feud. I mean, right now it's just, it's just basically chair shot to the head. And I think, you know, we can debate that. I think we should. I wrote a column on it on pwtorch.com. But, you know, that aside, that's really the only story at this point in time between those two guys. And assuming they're going to continue to go down that road, tonight is a great chance. There's a lot of elements in that ring for Spears to go out there and kind of own his moment, you know, make sure that people forget about that whole 10 gimmick and, you know, become a new character, be, you know, that vicious heel. And drum up that heat and drum up that interest. I think it's a big moment for him. I'm just going out on a limb and predicting that he's going to have some sort of involvement at some point. And I think when that time comes, he's got to deliver so people stop seeing, oh, that's that 10 guy from WWE. He's here in AEW. I think he's got to shed that at some point. And tonight is a great opportunity for him to do so with all those pieces and all those elements in that ring in the main event.
Yeah, and I think that the show itself is going to be pretty good. It's going to be a nice little exhibition for some of the folks who haven't seen, say, the Rhodes brothers in some time together, the Bucks. I mean, I'll get to the Bucks in a minute, but and others. But actually, you know what? Let me turn around and talk about the Bucks now. I think as executives in your promotion, it's great to kind of keep yourselves in the periphery and not invite the questions of are they power mad, et cetera. But with a strong tag division, how much should they keep themselves strong regardless of their status as executives?
I think they need to keep themselves very, very strong. You know, I mean, I know that's kind of the age old thing, you know, the executives of the company booking themselves in top positions. Well, you know, I think there's some truth in that. And I think there's some furrowed eyebrows when that kind of thing happens, but you know, they're executives of this company for a reason. You know, they are a pivotal part of why AEW exists. And it's not just because of their business acumen. It's not just because, you know, they found a way to, you know, make money on the independent scene outside of just wrestling. It's not because they've, you know, marketed themselves and, you know, developed, you know, a revenue stream with merchandise, with Hot Topic. You know, that's all on the side. I mean, the main reason why they're able to do what they do is because they're really, really talented in the ring. That's, you know, first and foremost. And because of that fact, because they have they give everything to the audience in a lot of different ways, and they can wrestle loads of different styles. Like I said, they can have a spot fest match with the Lucha Brothers, and they can tell, you know, intricate stories, which is something that I think we're going to see tonight. They're stars. People want to watch them. People want to see them wrestle. And you know, executive or not, they need to recognize that, own that, and position themselves in that way so that the company can make the most money. And then when the time comes for them to take that step back and just be executives in the company, they mean something to the company on the wrestling side. So when they put over the next generation, when they put over the new talent that's going to, you know, take the ball and run down the field after them, you know, they're giving them something with their legacy. So the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Cody, you know, they're stars of the company, whether they're executives or not. And I think they do need to be treated that way, at least for the time being, as the company gets ramped up and gets on TNT, gets on, you know, pay-per-view. They're the foundation. They're the stars, and they need to be treated that way.
And now we can talk a little bit about a third show of the day, and that was New Japan's G1 Day 2 B Block.
Actually, Rich, really quick, can I?
Oh yeah.
Can I ask you one quick question? I don't mean to interrupt.
Of course.
What are you expecting from Kenny Omega and Shima tonight?
Oh, I think that's going to be a thank you. That's an outstanding question and something I had on my notes, and I completely lost my train of thought thinking about Taylor Dane. My life is weird. It's just me. I think that's going to be a great match, and I think it's going to be a great audition for people to see that haven't seen him in New Japan, the best bout.
Yeah.
Because All In was a while ago, so seeing him and him being Kenny Omega and Pentagon Jr., it kind of has been in the periphery. That six-man tag was great, but I don't think people who have seen Kenny – have seen all of Kenny. As I joked on Twitter, a buddy of mine sent a tweet during that six-man that, you know, Kenny Omega has, like, the instant tag-in face in House of Fire built into his DNA, and that could have been his entire career, if not but for that ingenious run he had in New Japan. It would have been awesome. So I think it's going to be great. And Shima, I think he had a pretty good match last time with the Fallen Angel, Chris Daniels. So this will be even better. I think this will be another – he's kind of getting sea legs under him. He's been able to wrestle more. And then on top of that, he's going to have an opponent that can kind of generate a little bit more movement than, say, the Fallen Angel could. And that's no affront against him. It's just, you know, age and time, and, you know, it catches up to us all. So he's adapted. He's an outstanding tag wrestler. He's still a great singles wrestler. But you want to be careful and not put yourself in a position where you have to have him as like a higher card singles guy.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think, you know, the mainstream-ish world is going to see Kenny Omega really for the first time tonight in singles action with a good opponent. I expect this match to be really, really good too, and almost like Omega's coming out party in a way. For the new company, this one could be good.
And what do you think about the? Do you think there's a lot of pressure on him because he's been relatively unscathed in terms of like the matches. He hasn't been anything silly to a degree. I mean, he did the Fyter Fest stuff, the jokes backstage, but in ring, he's been the same Kenny Omega, just maybe a couple of notches down in terms of like the intensity, just because there really hasn't been the opening to do so.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's got too much pressure on him, and I think if he did, you know, it's Kenny Omega, right? I mean, I feel like that guy eats pressure for breakfast. When it comes time to perform, I mean, he does so. I think we'll see that here. I don't know what the I haven't heard any sort of rumors about if, you know, I don't, obviously John Moxley's not going to make an appearance today, but you know, I wonder if he'll address that match at all. It'll be interesting to see that. And I'm expecting big things. And this is what Kenny Omega does. You know, he's a featured premier act, and I think we'll see him, you know, kind of take that role on full steam.
And speaking of Moxley, that's one thing I definitely am really happy you were on for this. And when I came up with this idea, I was glad I had you scheduled, because on the canvas is a great deep dive look at the nuances and minutiae of excellent wrestling promos, what could be done, what should be done, what is and isn't done. And I'm looking at Moxley, and I am absolutely in love with how he's portraying two separate versions of himself in both companies, mm-hmm. AEW and New Japan. I remarked during today's match, and I said, I'm going to warning, spoilers may be ahoy now for New Japan. Nothing made me happier than seeing him go from the hardcore CZW Moxley to the guy who's took the DNA of what he did in WWE. He's and what he was trained to be. I mean, he trained to be a dirt, hard fighting, you know, put everything into it, just a battler wrestler, and then took his NXT and WWE experience and added in William Regal's knee trembler, a move that Regal used on him when they had their hellacious bout in NXT, which he ultimately won. And that is such a great nod to a man that was so influential on him. I would say him and early in NXT, him and Mick Foley were two of the biggest things that kind of made Moxley Dean Ambrose. And then when he came up for the Shield, it was like that next evolution for him. What were your thoughts on, if you did see the match, him using the knee trembler? What are your thoughts on him using, basically, even down to the outfits he's wearing? In AEW, it's this more ritzy, like he wore like the Vegas Riot gear for his hardcore matches, mm-hmm. non-sanctioned match with Janela, to his boots and trunks in New Japan. Even to the elevated version versus non-elevated version of his Dirty Deeds, which has now become either the Death Rider in New Japan or, what did he call it, the Paradigm Shift in AEW.
Paradigm Shift, yeah. No, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind when I see a match like he had with Joey Janela at Fyter Fest, and then you watch the match that he had in the first night of the B-Block in the G1, I mean, his range as a performer and his range as an artist in that ring is, I don't know, Rich, I mean, almost unparalleled in the business today, to be able to do both of those things, you know, both of the spectrums of wrestling, super hardcore, thumbtacks, barbed wire, and then you flip over on the other side and you're in the G1 and it's, you know, hard hitting, you know, wrestling in its truest sense. So I think from an in-ring perspective, the artistry of that is magical, and I don't know if there is anybody doing it that way in the business right now. I think you know, you listen to Moxley and the interviews that he has done with Wade and with Jericho and others, and you sense and you get the feeling that there's a human behind that character that is just so happy to be free and so happy that he can explore the entirety of that spectrum. And I think, you know, to have that bottled up in WWE for so long had to eat away at him, knowing the range that he had, knowing that he had the ability to be such a diverse performer from one side of the spectrum to the other. So it's really fun to see that come to fruition and to see it not. And I think if you're watching it, okay, you watch him at Fyter Fest, you know, at one point, and then you have to wait 6 months, and then you see him again down the road in the G1. I'm not sure that you'd be able to really to really appreciate just how good he is with those performances being so far apart. But you look at, you know, you look at the G1 match that he had and then the match a couple weeks ago at Fyter Fest, and you get to realize those two different matches, you know, almost back to back within a close time frame. And I think it just hits you as to how strong of a performer he is. As far as the match today goes, I think using that knee is such a it's a nod to his mentor. It's a nod to someone that helped make him, and I think it's also a nod to the fact that if it wasn't for somebody like William Regal, if it wasn't for his time in NXT, I'm not sure if he's in the G1. I'm not sure that he has that added layer to him as a performer and as an artist if he doesn't have that time with Regal, if he doesn't have that time in NXT, if he doesn't have that time to, you know, hone and develop that part of his act and that part of his performance. So I think, could I be reading into that a little bit too much? Sure. But, I don't think that's in there for no reason. It doesn't seem like he does stuff in that ring without any particular intricate reason behind it. So that's how I read it. I thought it was a nice little moment and a hell of a match.
Yeah, and I think one day I'm going to have to take the time to do a deep dive on William Regal and his importance not only to WWE, but to maintaining wrestling at the level it's been. I mean, his keen eye. Every show I've been to when it comes to Mania Weekend, I look to the left or the right of me, and he's there. And yep. I'm like, he's doing all of this. Then he's flying out the PWG, he's flying around the world, and he's reporting back, and he's the scout of scouts. And between him and Triple H and just the level of scouts that they've kind of built in terms of ex-wrestlers, it's amazing to me. You know, while you're bringing in the ex-sports guys, great. Make them get an opportunity, see if they can figure something out. God bless. But Regal is finding workers out there who, after his own heart, and helping mold those guys and the amount of wrestlers that are going to carry on after him. Same with Lance Storm at his Storm Wrestling Academy. It's amazing to me that these guys are they're invaluable.
Yeah. And I think I was first going to say, you know, in 10 years' time, you're going to look at the landscape of WWE and NXT and maybe even, you know, companies like Evolve at that point. And it's not going to even be 10 years, but I'll say 10 years just for the sake of argument. And, you know, the talent that's in top slots, the talent that's in roles that are, you know, defined to draw money for the company, it's going to be talent that William Regal has cultivated. You know, it's going to be guys that he has seen, that he has brought in, and it's like he's already left his mark on the wrestling business from, you know, an in-ring perspective. And now with the role that he's in right now, he's going to leave a different mark with, hey, I've cultivated and I've brought in and I've scouted, you know, the next generation of top talent in WWE and heck, maybe even beyond that, we're already starting to see it with a guy like Moxley, who's, was worked with by William Regal, you know, his act massaged by Regal. And now he's off, helping and working for a different company. So you're going to see in short order, you know, his fingerprints all over the world of wrestling as far as, you know, talent goes.
And when you look at the B block and we think about training on that end, it's amazing that one of the top young lions in New Japan is coming to the ring in a Moxley shirt. And what were your thoughts on that? And what are your thoughts on Moxley, even though he might be, shared time with AEW, the influence he's having on New Japan at present?
Well, I think for one thing, I thought the Moxley shirt, that's just, I don't know. There's stuff like that in wrestling that when I see that, I just, you know, I'm not sure that if it ever has like true significant meaning, but sometimes I watch stuff like that and I just go, man, that's wrestling being fun, you know? I mean, sometimes that's all that it is, and that's kind of the vibe I got from that. And I really thought it was a fun little moment. As far as Moxley goes for New Japan, you know, I think, you know, two things. One, on the artistic side, since that's, you know, a focus of mine and something that I enjoy talking about, I mean, he adds another flavor to that tournament, to his block. And I think that's important for the G1 in general, not just this year and not just because of Jon Moxley, but, you know, with these G1 matches and with this tournament as a whole, there's a lot of wrestling there, and there's a lot of great wrestling there. And I think what makes the tournament so intriguing, with so much wrestling involved and so many matches taking place, is that there has to be some diversity within the matches, within those blocks. I'm not sure you want to watch, you know, a Tanahashi Okada match over and over and over and over and over again across, you know, the entirety of this tournament between all opponents. There has to be some differences there. And I think that's one great thing that Jon Moxley brings to the table from an optics perspective. He has different kinds of matches. He has a different style. I mean, yes, it's rooted in, you know, kind of the tried and true, you know, Japan style wrestling, but there's something just a little bit twisted about it. He takes his own spin on what that means and uses his character to, you know, define that spin, and he brings something different to the table. And I think that plays well and will continue to play well as we go through this tournament night in and night out. From a business perspective, I think it's obvious, you know, he's a big star, you know, he's Dean Ambrose. He's a former WWE champion. He's been in the Shield. He's been all over the world. I mean, he's wrestled everywhere. He's got a fan base. He's got a following. And I think, you know, just like any company, you want guys like that. Guys like that, stars like that, of that caliber, are going to bring new eyes to your product. I don't have the numbers in front of me to tell you that, oh, he meant, you know, X amount of business or X amount of New Japan World subscriptions, but you got to think that there's some sort of uptick there because he has name value and because he's a popular character in the wrestling world. So I think he delivers and helps New Japan on both of those, on both sides of that coin.
And what about with the way he approaches, and again, like I said, I really wanted to talk about that on the canvas idea with him, in terms, even if it was entrances, you could see it's clear.
Oh, yeah.
In AEW, he does not want to do anything that's Shield-like. Whereas in New Japan, he's happy to do the full appear in the crowd, walk through the crowd, and after the first time in AEW, he's kind of nixed that. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think positive, negative, and just overall, how do you feel about it?
No, I honestly, I don't know that I think it's positive or negative. I think it's Jon Moxley, you know, the man, like the real guy there, trying to differentiate a little bit anyway who he is in each company. I think that from my perspective is almost like him kind of just making good on his own promise to, you know, be able to do whatever he wants, however he wants, and whenever he wants. I think if someone told him, hey, you know what, we need the same Jon Moxley in AEW that in New Japan, or we need that same, you know, Jon Moxley that you're doing in New Japan. We love that. We need that same exact guy in AEW. You know, he starts getting put in that bucket and in that, you know, jail almost that he spent so much time trying to get out of. So I think from just a him perspective, this is him testing the waters a little bit, seeing what works. I think Moxley's a guy that's also, in addition to working for himself, I think he understands the audiences a little bit. You know, the New Japan audience in Japan is different than the audience that he's catering to in AEW. You know, they are not the same types of audiences. I think that's why you see him wearing the trunks in New Japan, but he looks more, you know, rugged and, you know, more, you know, street-like when he's in AEW. You know, I think that's a conscious effort on his part to appeal and engage with two very different audience groups. And I think that just, once again, it speaks to his range. It speaks to his range as a performer to be able to pull off both. But I also think it speaks to just how smart of a worker he is and how smart of an artist he is to recognize that he needs to do that to get over with both crowds.
Excellent. And before we get too far into this, we do have a call, and it's from longtime Torch contributor on the airwaves. So, Mr. 478, welcome back to the deep dive. State your name as if we need to know it or where you're calling from, because everybody should know when it's 478. It's only one man.
How you doing today, Rich and Alan?
I'm good. Oh, no, it's not Alan. It's this is actually Zach.
How's it going, man?
Oh, my bad. My bad. I'm sorry.
It's all good. It's all good, Darrell.
I was just listening to you guys' conversation, man. And I was enjoying it on this business Saturday.
Yeah, it's wild. Like I said, I'm going to be doing the Evolve show, so I'm definitely not going to have Twitter up, because I might have a tablet or my other laptop like playing, or something on TV playing the fight for the Fallen, just so I can kind of have a general idea while I'm recapping Evolve. But I'm trying to avoid. I knew I'd be dead if I didn't have G1 under my belt before the night started.
Oh yeah, it's everywhere, man. It's a good. That was a good choice on your part. You would have been dead in the water.
And I've been up since 5 this morning because I had to watch G1 live. This
there
is gonna be my third year in a row watching each show from start to finish live on the first run. So I'm gonna watch both other shows. I'm gonna watch both of those at the same time. I got 2 TVs set up, so I watch one on one and one on the other one. But my question for you guys tonight will be, my first question will be, with Evolve. WWE did some videos to get you familiar with some of the competitors on Evolve, from Evolve. And one of the videos they did to hype the Evolve unification title match. And I love what they did with that video, introducing you Austin Theory and JD Drake. And I want to know, how did y'all think about that, and what y'all think about them doing those videos? And who did you see come out of that video as like a potential star? Because I like the guy JD Drake, even though he's not the size that somebody like Vince would like, but I like the shine that they gave him on that video, hyping that whole title match.
Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the videos were very well done, and I think, you know, you can say a lot about the WWE and when what they do right, what they do wrong. One thing that they are pretty consistent with is the production work within any sort of hype video or promo video. Like, usually those things clock in at an A+ grade all the time. And I don't think these are any different. I think it was important for them and for Evolve to take the time to, you know, kind of give everybody some insight as to who else is going to be on the show aside from guys like Matt Riddle, who a lot of people may already know. I think it's good for them to kind of set the table for a lot of new eyeballs that say, hey, this is who you're going to see tonight, and this is why their match is important, and this is why they're important to the brand, and this is why we are featuring them on the WWE Network at a premiere time on a Saturday night. So I think it was really smart from a business perspective to lay that foundation for a new audience. And to me, you know, yeah, that main event, both those guys really came across well in these videos. I think, you know, I have no idea what the outlook for them is, you know, long term in WWE as top stars for the main brand SmackDown and Raw, but I think they looked like $1 million in those videos, and I think they've got a chance tonight to shine, show what they're all about, and try to make a bit of a name for themselves. So I thought it was a good decision all around. I thought it was executed well, and I thought not just the main event talent, but really all the talent involved in those that video suite, you know, came off looking great.
And for me, the second I saw him at an Evolve show, I thought Austin Theory was bound at some point for the WWE because he's got the body type. He looks athletic enough. He's in that, and I don't want to put the pressure on him for it, but he looks like baby Seth Rollins in terms of his build, moveset. Now he has to work on the mic stuff, and I think his heel turn and kind of that attitude change has done a fantastic job for him. But it's the next step. What is he going to do to make him stand out when it's time to go against someone that's an equally talented talker or a superior talker? Or are you going to stick him with someone that maybe does it for him? But I think, like you said, Darrell. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Zach.
Oh, no, I was just going to chime in on that. And I think, you know, I think the comparison to Seth Rollins is really interesting, Rich, just because I think it speaks to the fact that WWE has really talented guys on their roster, and whether it's Evolve or NXT or otherwise, and you try to, you know, look at them and go, okay, who does this guy remind me of? Who does that guy remind me of? And you remember that these guys have a lot of, there's just raw talent there that needs to be, you know, finessed. And you look at a guy like him, and man, I mean, the sky is potentially the limit. I mean, hey, if he ends up like Seth Rollins, that's a big win for WWE, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the old school Shield, when Seth had his old Tyler Black blonde streak, and he was basically known as the psychopath of the group, that would, you know, they'd be in a six man, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he'd be jumping off a balcony and going through a table. And now he's evolved into a guy who I would argue, and I'd love you two gentlemen's opinion, I'd say he has kind of surpassed Roman as the top guy in the company. And it's, at this point, to be honest, not even close.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah, I mean, I think you just look at both guys, and obviously, I'll even just take the Universal Championship out of it. I mean, if you just, let's just assume that, you know, you take the belt out of the comparison, and you look at a guy like Seth Rollins and what he's doing and just how he looks out there, just how he looks in the ring, he's more engaged. He seems more interested. He seems that he's got like some stake in the game, not just in his own performance, but a stake in as far as like, you know, what this means to him, for him personally, but what it means to him as being, you know, a top guy for the company, and how is his, what's his legacy going to be for the company as a whole. And then you flip the script and you kind of look at Roman Reigns, and I know this, you know, this past week's Raw's main event is kind of hard to use as a talking point because it was just so egregious in so many different ways. But you just look at Roman and he's out there, he walks out, he does his thing, and that's about it. I don't get a true sense of passion or engagement there. And then you put the Universal title back into the picture, and it leads me to think that somebody inside WWE, you know, sees something similar as well.
Darrell, what do you think?
I also agree with you. It's how he carried himself on there. And just by, I know people didn't like what he was saying on his Twitter, but, you know, now he's starting to step up and starting to take – it seems like he's taking more leadership. And when you look at him on the TV, he looked like he's a leader. And when you go on all the other stuff and some of that other social media stuff, you see other people, like I remember back New Day before anything, they used to call him captain. Like he was captain of the ship. Even on some of the other stuff that they do, they call him captain and everything. So I just think it's starting to reflect even more out today on television.
And then with New Japan, what were your thoughts on the Jay White in that main event? And did you feel kind of that same Roman Reigns feeling I did with Jay, where he kind of got outshone by Goto in that main event, in my opinion?
Yeah, but I kind of had a feeling that Goto was going to win that one. And it, with Naito losing, you know, I thought they were telling a story about people, you know, the guys who were supposed to be at the top, taking their eye off the ball and taking somebody for granted. And I'm liking where they started. And, you know, I didn't think you seen the best Jay White, but I think that was purpose. Like, he did that on purpose. So, you know, okay. So you can get that from Goto, because I think Goto really needed that. And my whole thing about on the B show today, and I wanted to ask you guys, was not even with the main people who was on the show, I like the match, the three-way match between the LA Dojo guys with Kenta and the New Japan the regular dojo guys with Tanahashi, and I liked it, the matchup between the LA Dojo guys and the New Japan regular dojo guys. What did y'all think about that in that match and how that everything looked? Because I think you're starting to see like the LA Dojo and the New Japan Dojo, because you had Kenta and Goto representing the LA Dojo, and they was bringing a different type of feel, even with also those young boys did also.
Yeah, I think for me, I thought this was a nice reward for the LA young boys to be, just like they were in Texas, part of the New Japan outfit for the tour. I think it's a nice reward for the job well done. And again, at some point during the G1, I'm going to be doing a deep dive on the influence of, despite his injury, Katsuyori Shibata.
Mm-hmm. That's a must listen show right there. that's a great show, and I think there's a lot there for you. I agree with both you guys. I thought it was a really kind of a fun match, and I think, you know, Kenta and Tanahashi were both kind of came off, you know, conveyed a sense of leadership is the wrong word, but I think you get what I'm trying to say. Like, they really seem to own, mm-hmm. you know, their sides. And I thought between the two of them, they played off each other nicely. And I thought, you know, with them playing off each other so nice, their teams did as well. And I think that it for me, it made me go, man, I can't wait to see that match in the G1. I really am excited for that one. And a lot of it is because of what they did today. I thought they showed some really good chemistry together.
What about you, Darrell?
I did too. And that's with everything that it was doing today. And also, I know y'all was speaking with Mox and him having his young boy come out wearing his stuff and holding the title. I really enjoyed that, and have him come out in the crowd with it. I would love to see how that influenced him from once he goes and take his trip overseas or wherever he goes and come back. And how does he mix that into the character that he does? So, and when I was watching the LA Dojo guys, you could tell that they gave off a feel of a Shibata. They weren't doing everything that, you know, he can do, but you could see the basics that they were doing and how they was coming strong and hitting hard. It was like you were looking at him through them, like you could tell that he put his touches on them, even with Goto today. And how they was talking about him, how Kevin Kelly was talking about how Shibata made him go back and work on endurance and back to the basics. And you can see, especially with him pulling out some old moves from back in the day that he used to do. All of that was just good to me.
And physically he was like, he was bigger, but he was leaner. And that goes to what you were talking about in the outstanding work by the announcers, highlighting that.
Yeah.
Goto looked, I have not seen him look that good in years. And the match he had, and even that finish, was just so vicious and so like, yeah, Goto's back. Because to me, Goto was always, when I got into New Japan Heavy the last couple of G1s, when I first got back in, I saw him kind of as a guy who looked good, did good things, but he was just kind of there. And then it took me, you know, to be honest, I thought he was a punk because he spent the better part of 2 years fighting chaos, lost to every member, and then joined Chaos.
Yep.
So I thought this was a great reintroduction to him after having some time off, where after he had been trading the never open weight title, and he's kind of reintroduced himself, and it was a heck of a reintroduction.
That, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as like how to define the performance a little bit. Reintroduction. I mean, he really kind of just kind of shed some of that bad backstory, not bad story, but just kind of a non-impactful backstory the last couple of years. And I thought he came to the table and had, just like you said, he reintroduced himself and goes, hey, no, look at me again. Look what I can do. And he had a hell of a damn match.
I would say.
And,
bro,
you said you had
too.
Another question?
Especially to come off that New Japan Cup loss. But, I got an AEW question, okay? Now, with the matches that they have tonight, and I know y'all was talking about Kenny Omega. Now, with this being first single match in a while for him, do you think that he has to go a little bit all out, or should he simmer down a little bit since it's not really one of their biggest shows? It's still similar, like almost a B show. Would you like to see him come out and put his stamp on it to let everybody know that I am the top guy in AEW? I'm the one that everybody should be shooting for and comparing themselves with and trying to step their game up higher.
Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I think for me the most important thing for Kenny Omega tonight, because he is in that one-on-one match, and like you said, he hasn't been in one for quite some time, I think the biggest thing that has to happen is he needs to look like a star and look like one of the biggest stars of the company. And if that means that he needs to be flying around that ring, and if that means he needs to be going all out to convey that to the audience, then, I think that's the kind of match that he has to have. However, I don't know that Kenny Omega needs to present himself in that way and have those kind of matches to show an audience how big of a star he is. I think he's got a presence about him. I think he's got, he's going to have the reaction. He's going to have the crowd on his side during this match. So I think he just needs to continue to convey that sense of stardom. And like I said, if that's rooted in a five-star classic where he's, bumping all around the ring, then so be it. But I think Kenny Omega is a strong enough performer where he can convey that sense of star power without giving away everything in a B-level match on a B-level show. He's got to walk that fine line. I think it's, he needs to learn from a career saving and longevity perspective. He needs to learn how to have different styles of matches based on what the show is. And tonight will be a big test for that. But the key is star power. The key is conveying to the audience that this is a top three star of AEW. If he can do that, that's the most important thing. It doesn't necessarily have to, manifest itself in a five-star classic where, he's taking, pile drivers on the ring apron.
And I completely agree. I think for him, this match, especially against Shima, it's going to be a lot more high-flying than perhaps his match against the Fallen Angel, but it's going to give him a bigger opportunity to show that Shima can still go at that level, because I think a lot of people have kind of slept on what he's done in wrestling and don't necessarily know where he's been. So I think this will be a nice reintroduction, again, that magic word, for him as well.
Okay, that's all I was just trying to see, because I know we was also talking about Seth Rollins and how he's becoming the leader of WWE, something that I seem like they need. And, I'm wanting to see if Kenny should put himself out there as being the leader of, or just somebody who, the number one guy there without giving away too much on a B show. And like you guys are saying, the star power, just to people who probably just looking at the show for the first time and stuff like that, especially if that pre-show is still the same way as it was before. I feel like him giving off a star power and giving a different feel could really take a lot of that conversation out of it, even if it sprinkle his head in there tonight, which they say it shouldn't. But even if it does, that could take off all that conversation and leave that in the past and go back to a new direction.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to hearing your reactions to it and seeing it, Darrell. You have yourself a wonderful rest of your weekend, and tomorrow is yet another day. We got a block, so tomorrow on Monday, we got 3 days in a row, so this is going to be a test for the endurance there.
I'll be up at 2. It starts at 2, so I'll be there and I'm watching it soon to come on.
There you go.
Man, God bless you, Darrell. I got up at like 9, and I watched a little bit of, or not 9, like 8 something, and I saw the last two matches and then went back later and watched the first three of the G1 block. And then I'll catch a tag match here or there, but I can't hang with Darrell. He goes for it, Zach.
He does. He does. I think, I've got a 5-month-old on my hands who's just started like sleeping through the night. So had the G1 happened 2 months ago, I would have been up at 2 a.m. no problem, wide-eyed and ready to go. Not anymore.
Yeah, get the rest when you can. Trust me. It is.
You're right. Right.
And it's funny. I was talking to my wife this morning when she was watching, because she like rolled over and saw I had it on the. Because it's less loud if I have it on the laptop than projected on the TV. And then she was like, oh, God, it's that time of year. And I told her, like, our anniversary is coming up on the 18th, and my two wonderful children, Sonata and Evil, are wrestling. And I just don't know what I'm going to do with myself. And I did the math. I was like, for New Japan World, it's been in existence for almost 5 years. And that's half of the time I've been married. My wife has had to deal with me watching the G1 at whatever time on a laptop, either in a hotel room during a family vacation, our bedroom, sneaking downstairs, putting it on the laptop to watch on the treadmill. And just, she knows like this entire month now it's G1 season.
It's G1 month. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, my wife isn't as seasoned as yours, but she's learning quick, learning quick enough, especially on a day like today with so many things going on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They went swimming, and now they'll be back. And I think they'll get back in time for dinner, and then I'll be relegated to the laptop because my son will most likely want to play some NHL before bed.
Hey, good for him. Good for him.
Yeah, he's having a ball. And so before we get out of here, why don't you again remind folks what you do with The Torch, where they can find you on social media, and anything you have coming up, including what show did you do yesterday for on the campus?
Yeah, I appreciate it. So guys, my pwtorch.com work starts on Mondays. Monday nights, live during Raw, I do the Raw report for pwtorch.com. My report lives live right alongside Wade Keller's on the site every Monday. So I break down, what's going on Raw, frame by frame, all the way through the show as it happens, and then also provide my analysis on those happenings as the show progresses. And then later in the week, my VIP audio show On the Canvas drops. So go VIP, check that out. It is a current event-based show that's rooted and focused on the art of wrestling. And this past week, the show that dropped yesterday, I previewed Extreme Rules, but I still maintain kind of the artistic scope on that preview. So I break down and give artistic grades and analysis to the build of every single match. So how was the build between Roman Reigns and Undertaker versus Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon? So we get into the intricacies of the art within that build. How were the promos? How was the physicality between both teams? So we break that down, not just for that match, but for every single match on the card. So you can check that out right now as a VIP member. And like I said, my show drops on Fridays each and every week. I don't have the topic quite yet for next week, but I'm sure it's going to be rooted in something that happens between now and midnight tonight. I would put my money on that one. So check that out, go VIP, and give it a shot. And while you're doing that, give me a follow on Twitter, guys, at ZHeydornTorch, at ZHeydornTorch.
Excellent, Zach, and thank you again. You're always welcome. Can't wait to have you on again, and hope you enjoy the rest of your night/weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Rich. I always love being on the show. Always love talking wrestling with you, so thank you for having me.
Yes, always a pleasure, and it's always a pleasure to have you guys listen. So as we end this delightful episode, I challenge you, go beyond where you think you can go. Go Plus Ultra. Go where you go and enjoy it, because life is short, time short. If you like what you like, do it. Have fun. Don't hurt anybody. Until next week, This is Rich Van for the PW Torch signing off. Go VIP. Not only do you get shows like the Deep Dive, all the PW Torch Daily Cast shows, but you also get shows like Zach's. You get Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. You get the flagship with Wade Keller on the Pro Wrestling Post Show, Pro Wrestling Podcast, and, of course, a million other things, including 30-plus years of wrestling history and quality commentary. So, with that being said, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will be diving next week.